Section 3, The March Toward Catastrophe. As you read, look for Americans' Belief in Manifest Destiny, The South's Reaction to the Compromise of 1850, How the Kansas-Nebraska Act Led to Bleeding Kansas, The Brooks-Sumner Affair, The Impact on the North and the South of the Dred Scott Decision and John Brown's Raid. Terms: Manifest Destiny, Compromise of 1850, Fugitive Slave Act, Fire Eaters, Kansas-Nebraska Act. With abolitionists attacking slavery as a moral evil and slaveholders defending it as a positive good, the grounds for finding a solution for the problem of the century were slipping away. Increasingly, the North and the South were marching in different directions. Could the unity of the nation survive? In the decades of the 1840s and 1850s, a string of events seemed to conspire to make reconciliation of the sections more difficult. Manifest Destiny. A constant in American history from 1607 to 1900 was the expansion of the population westward. By the 1840s, most white Americans believed that expansion of the nation across the continent to the Pacific Ocean was our God-given right, our manifest destiny, as a journalist put it in 1845. But there were obstacles. Much of the land west of the Louisiana Purchase was claimed by either Mexico or Great Britain. And there was also Texas. Once owned by Mexico, Texas had won its independence in 1836. The Republic of Texas wanted annexation to the United States, but Americans feared annexation would cause war with Mexico. In the expansionist fever of the 1840s, the United States did bring Texas into the Union as a slave state in 1845, and war with Mexico did break out in 1846. David Wilmot of Pennsylvania introduced legislation in Congress that would prohibit slavery in any territory acquired from Mexico as a result of the war. The Wilmot Proviso never passed, but it alarmed Southerners. The proviso strengthened the secessionists, those who wanted to withdraw from the Union, in South Carolina. They were urging the state to get out of the Union before Congress could take action against slavery. The Compromise of 1850. At the end of the Mexican War in 1848, the triumphant United States annexed the enormous territory from Texas west to the Pacific. Almost immediately, California became a prize possession because of the discovery of gold. The population grew so rapidly that California could apply for statehood in 1850. The South opposed the addition of a new free state because it would give free states a majority in the U.S. Senate. John C. Calhoun spent the last days of his life opposing California statehood. He thought the only way the Union could be saved was by giving each major section of the country a veto power so it could protect itself. He called the new concept the concurrent majority. He was still struggling with the problem of protecting the minority from the majority, a problem no democracy has totally solved. The crisis concerning California was solved after Calhoun's death by another Henry Clay compromise. In the Compromise of 1850, California was to be admitted to the Union as a free state, a big victory for the North. A new Fugitive Slave Act was passed that required all citizens, North and South, to assist in catching and returning runaway slaves to their owners. This was supposed to be a big victory for the South, but it angered many Northerners and strengthened abolitionists. At the Nashville Convention of Southern States in 1850, delegates considered responses to the compromise. The radical secessionist of South Carolina argued for secession of southern states immediately, but the radicals were largely ignored as the other Southern delegates were not yet ready to break with the Union. The First Secession Crisis. Unlike other Southern states, South Carolina embraced its secessionists and gave them a majority in the General Assembly in the 1850 election. The Assembly elected a secessionist, John H. Means, of Fairfield District, as governor, and the most radical and outspoken secessionist, Robert Barnwell Rhett, to the U.S. Senate. But Rhett could not convince the state to secede immediately, so he resigned within 2 years. By the early 1850s, South Carolina whites were divided into three factions on the only issue, fire eaters, the name given to Southerners who actively advocated secession, like Rhett thought was important, secession. The first secession crisis ended in frustration for the secessionist, but the decade of the 1850s was filled with events that fueled their cause. One was the publication of Uncle Tom's Cabin in 1852 by Harriet Beecher Stowe. This blockbuster, one of the best-selling books in American history, thrilled anti-slavery advocates, but infuriated Southern whites. It described in terrifying detail some of the worst aspects of the slave system. The accusations were not new, but the story's heartbreaking description of the breakup of slave families was most effective for the anti-slavery cause. Bleeding Kansas. Westward expansion continued, and so did the controversy over whether slavery would be allowed in the new territories carved out of the northern section of the Louisiana Purchase. Congress had banned slavery there in the Missouri Compromise. The South appeared to have won a great victory when Congress passed the Kansas-Nebraska Act in 1854. The act allowed the people who moved into these new territories to decide the issue of slavery for themselves. Now suddenly it was possible that new slave states could be brought into the Union. The Kansas-Nebraska Act played havoc with the American political system. The Whig Party, which had arisen in the 1830s, was already weak. It split on the slavery issue and fizzled out. A new major party, the Republican Party, arose in place of the Whigs and several smaller parties. It was entirely a northern party, the first major party without a nationwide membership and appeal. The Democratic Party of Jefferson and Jackson was deeply damaged by a split into northern and southern wings or factions. As settlers began to move into Kansas and take up land to farm, northerners sent anti-slavery families to settle and southerners sent pro-slavery families. Each side tried to gain the majority. Both factions formed governments, and soon fighting broke out. Attacks on communities by one faction were answered by massacres of villages by the other. Bleeding Kansas became a national issue and a symbol of growing tensions between North and South. The Brooks-Sumner Affair. In a debate on the Senate floor in 1856 about the conflict in Kansas, Charles Sumner of Massachusetts insulted Senator Andrew Butler of South Carolina by associating him with killers and thugs in Kansas. 2 days later, Representative Preston Brooks of South Carolina, Senator Butler's nephew, came into the Senate chamber and beat Sumner senseless with a sturdy walking cane. Sumner was severely injured and could not return to the Senate for 3 years. Brooks was hailed as a hero in the South. Supporters sent him hundreds of canes commemorating his heroic act. Civil debate was giving way to physical force. Nationalism was giving way to sectionalism. The two sections were growing farther apart on their understandings of the nature of freedom, democracy, and honor. The Dred Scott Decision. As a result of the struggle in Kansas, many people hoped a case in the Supreme Court would settle the matter of slavery in the Western territories once and for all. The case was about Dred and Harriet Scott, slaves who had been taken by their owner into free states and into territories where slavery was banned by the Missouri Compromise. The Scotts sued in the courts, claiming that being taken into free states and territories made them free. The Supreme Court finally ruled in 1857. The 7-2 vote tells us much about what racial attitudes were acceptable to many people, North and South, at the time. Chief Justice Roger Taney wrote the decision for the majority. The first part stated that the Scots were not citizens of the United States and thus had no right to bring a case before the federal court. He further asserted that people of color were beings of an inferior order that had no rights which white men were bound to respect. In the second part, Taney ruled that Congress had no authority to ban slavery from the territories. Therefore, the Missouri Compromise of 1820 was unconstitutional. The third part stated that being transported into free states did not change the Scots' status. This seemed to raise the question of whether any state could prohibit slavery. Southerners were thrilled over the Dred Scott decision, never mind that the third part ran roughshod over any concept of states' rights. Most sentiment in the North was strongly opposed to the decision. Many Northerners were convinced of a great conspiracy to impose slavery on the whole country. The new president, Democrat James Buchanan, approved the decision and thought it had put the slavery question to rest. With both the presidency and the U.S. Supreme Court controlled by pro-slavery men, anti-slavery groups in the North were becoming more anxious about the future. John Brown's Raid. Some individuals within the anti-slavery ranks were willing to take drastic measures. One such person was John Brown. In October 1859, he led a band of men in a raid on a federal arsenal in Harper's Ferry, Virginia, now West Virginia, hoping to capture arms for a great slave rebellion. They captured the arsenal, but a company of federal troops commanded by Colonel Robert E. Lee quickly crushed the insurrection. Brown was captured, convicted of treason, and hanged. John Brown's impossible mission stirred up emotions between the sections. Many in the North hailed him as a hero, and he became a martyr, a person who suffers or dies for a cause, in the anti-slavery cause. In South Carolina, John Brown's raid was a godsend to the radical secessionist. It supported their claim that the North was prepared to do anything to rid the nation of slavery. Their solution of immediate secession was beginning to appeal to more people. Throughout the state, communities organized vigilante committees to harass any strangers who might come through. South Carolina was nearly closing itself off from the rest of the world. Sectional tensions in the nation were at a fever pitch after John Brown's raid. The stage was set for perhaps the most dramatic election in American history, and the one with the most consequences. Do you remember? 1. Define in sentence form, manifest destiny, fugitive slave law, fire eaters. 2. How did the publication of Uncle Tom's Cabin help the abolitionist cause? 3. What was the main purpose of the Kansas-Nebraska Act? The following is a chapter summary of Chapter 8. After the War of 1812, a feeling of nationalism drew Americans together as they enjoyed prosperity brought about by internal improvements made throughout the country. This was an era of good feelings. Unfortunately, that era would come to a close in the mid-1820s. The United States would begin a move from nationalism to sectionalism, which would begin tearing the nation apart. The two major sections of the United States were developing differently. the North was becoming more industrial and was manufacturing goods that could be sold at home. This meant that the need to import goods from Europe would decline. The South was still producing staple crops for exportation. Plantation owners saw no way to continue raising cotton and rice without the slaves to work the fields. The issue of slavery would be a major reason for strained relations between these two sections of the United States. Although compromise worked for a while to appease pro-slavery and anti-slavery Americans, events would happen in the 1850s that made many realize that living under one government might not be possible.